Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gigax, and today I am going to read from my own local memorandum of understanding. This is for branch 2502 in Las Vegas and Southern Nevada. And the recording may sound a little bit different. I only have a paper copy of my LMOU. It is not available in electronic form. So I have paper here. You can hear me shuffling the paper. And I have to be a little bit further away from the microphone. Maybe that'll wind up sounding better. We're about to find out. So the reason I want to read this, this local agreement only pertains to my local union, but it'll give you an idea of some of the stuff that's in the local agreement and why it's relevant to you. So I'm going to read this as is, and I'm going to comment a little bit as we go along with some of the things that I think are particularly relevant. Most of the topics that are in here are also going to mirror topics in your own local, because in the national agreement, there's a list of things that should be covered in the local memorandum of understanding, and then you may have additional items in yours. Again, it's worth reading because it really informs the things that we do at the local level. So let's get started. Ours starts with Article 8, Hours of Work, and we start with Article 8.5.A, OTDL Sign-Up Period. 2 weeks prior to the start of the quarter, management will post the existing OTDL along with a sign-up sheet for employees to indicate their desire to change their existing status on the overtime desired list. So that's pretty straightforward. We post and you sign up what overtime you want in the next quarter. 8.5.B, OTDL sections and installations. Overtime desired lists will be separate by stations and installations as defined in this local memorandum of understanding. There will be one overtime desired list at the Boulder City Main Post Office for the Boulder City installation. Each station in the Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and Henderson installations will maintain an overtime desired list for their respective stations. And then there's a list here of all the different stations and what installation they're in. So this one wound up being important to me because in my episode for the CCAs, one of my early episodes when I get all fired up, I talk about CCAs being sent to other stations and they're supposed to volunteer for that. Or they're supposed to ask for volunteers and then go in seniority order. And in the contract, the language says installation or station. I forget exactly what it says in the contract. But it turns out that like here within Las Vegas, it's all the one installation. And so CCAs can be sent to other stations within Las Vegas without any repercussions. They don't need to ask for volunteers. Management can send them essentially as they see fit. It's only outside the installation that those rules apply. And so that's why, again, this is important to understand what this is. That's why it's important to read your local memorandum of understanding. After the list of stations, it goes on to read, any future stations are to be automatically included in this local agreement. Article 8.5.B, OTDL carryover. 1. Employees transferring / swapping into any new station or installation during the course of a quarter shall be allowed to continue on whatever OTDL category they were on at their prior assignment. 2. Employees converted to career status following the normal OTDL sign-up period shall be allowed to place their names on either the overtime desired list or work assignment list within 2 weeks of their effective conversion to career status. This is a nice change here at my local level because when I converted way back in the day from PTF to full-time regular, I was automatically put on the 8-hour list and I had to wait until the next quarter in order to sign up for the overtime list. So this, you know, addresses that. It was negotiated at the local level, and here is the agreement. 3. Where applicable, T6s shall be permitted the option of being placed on the overtime list of any stations at which they work. They shall be considered unavailable for OT at stations not assigned on that day. And we certainly have T6 swings, like my station and the Winterwood Post Office, we have T6 swings that go to both stations. And so this lets you know you could be on overtime at one but not at the other, or you could do both, but you can't, like if you're at East one day, you can't do overtime at Winterwood on that same day. Article 8.5.C.2.C, OTDL tracking. The shop stewards with the postmaster or his or her designee will review the office-wide overtime desired list weekly to identify and correct discrepancies. They will sign each week's list. These signatures will indicate that a review has occurred and corrective action was discussed and agreed upon. 8.9, wash-up time. Wash-up time. In accordance with the National Agreement, Article 8, Section 9, employees performing dirty work or work with toxic materials shall be granted reasonable wash-up time. So this is consistent with what it says in the National Agreement, but this just further clarifies that, yes, we do get wash-up time. Next, Article 10, leave. Article 10.3.C, choice vacation periods. The choice vacation period shall be from the first full week in April through the last full week in November. 2. Vacation chart. If you have a vacation chart, you should change your time from annual leave to sick leave. Anyway, vacation chart shall be set. Now I've messed myself up. Number two. Good times. By the way, I'm going to interrupt myself to give myself credit for all the times when reading the JCAM that it has talked about duties and I have not made any poop jokes. So good on me for that. All right, two. Vacation chart shall be for said year from the first full week of February through the week containing January 31st of the following year. Three. A vacation week shall be Monday through Saturday. So this is something in our local that is not necessarily standard. Our work week starts on Saturday, and so often the vacation week will start on Saturday as well. But here, it starts on Monday, and what's really nice about that is that that can coincide with your long weekend and give you a bunch of extra days off, depending on how your days off rotate. We'll get to rotating days off a little bit in a little bit. Number four, a seniority list shall be furnished and posted on a quarterly basis at each station. Five, in the Boulder City, Henderson, Las Vegas, and North Las Vegas installations, the following percentage shall be allowed off during each week. In those instances where computing the percentage results in a fraction, 0.5 or higher, including part-time regulars and PTFs, and city carrier assistants, shall be rounded up to the next higher number. The union and management shall meet during December of each year to coordinate the upcoming leave year for all installations. And then it has a month-by-month breakdown of what percentage of carriers are allowed to be off in each given week. And this translates to how many spaces there are on our vacation board for people to take leave. Six, for installations with multiple stations, if an employee bids another station within an installation, employee takes leave with them. If there is not a vacant opening on the annual leave chart with the same period, employee at the gaining unit goes on annual leave chart as an extra, and employee's spot will not be backfilled. If employee's selection becomes vacant at the new station, employee will fill it and the old station selection will be vacated. Article 10.3.D.1, bid rights. Employees earning 13 days annual leave and city carrier assistance shall bid for and be granted up to 10 continuous working days in the choice period on the first round of bidding. Article 10.3.D.2, bid rights. Employees earning 20 and 26 days annual leave shall bid for and be granted up to 15 continuous working days in the choice period on the first round of bidding. Now, at my station, when we did our last vacation bidding, during the first week, everybody was just taking 2 weeks. And so knowing this stuff is really useful. If I have a third week that I want to take, then I could have taken it in that first week of bidding because I earn extra leave. So knowing these rules can really benefit you. Article 10.3.F, bid chart supplementals. An employee on military leave / jury duty shall not be considered as one of the maximum number of employees that management has decided can be off duty at any given time. 1. At least 13 delegates shall be granted leave to attend union functions, provided that the union gives a 20-day notice. The 13 delegates shall be allocated as follows. 1 delegate from Boulder City, 2 delegates from Henderson, 2 delegates from North Las Vegas, 8 delegates from Las Vegas. If more delegates are desired by the union, management shall make every reasonable effort to grant this request. 2. Requests for spot annual leave will be submitted in duplicate to the immediate supervisor on PS Form 3971. To acknowledge receipt, the supervisor will initial and date supervisor notified block on PS Form 3971 and will return duplicate to employee. Leave will be granted on a seniority basis upon approval by management. Annual leave will be granted / denied by close of business Wednesday if request is submitted Monday. Failure to respond by supervisor by close of business Wednesday will constitute automatic approval of the request. So I've seen this come up on NALC Facebook groups where management just sits on these leave requests, and it's a way of like the giving it a pocket veto where they're denying it without actually denying it. So here, that's covered in my local, that if they don't respond, it's approved. 3, annual leave requests for week open on the vacation bid chart will not be denied if the request is received by 9 a.m. the Monday preceding the open week. Only at the time the bids are pulled shall a full week request take precedence over a partial week request. So this used to be an issue that if you had spot leave, you know, maybe I'm taking off June 15th and 16th, somebody could wind up taking, you know, down the road the full week of leave and bump me off the vacation board. And now my plans are all thrown into disarray. So this part of our local agreement now prevents that from happening. Article 10.4.B, annual leave sections and installations. Annual leave schedules shall be posted prior to February of each year. Bid period will be from the week containing January 1st through the week containing January 31st of said year. Annual leave will be administered by each station in those installations with multiple stations, as defined by this memorandum of understanding, solely for the purpose of Article 10 definition. And here again, we have a list of all the different stations and installations, and any future stations are to be automatically included in this local agreement. Article 10.4.B.2, first and second rounds of bidding. First and second round of bidding. The installation head shall notify employees as to the date bidding shall start. 1. All vacation bidding shall be by seniority. 2. Employee will be called to the designated bid location to review annual leave chart and make their vacation selection. This will be done on the clock. 3. Employees on leave or scheduled day off may/will submit in writing in advance through employer or another person of their choice. Employee failing to submit a bid on the first or second round shall revert to the bottom of the seniority list. So if you miss the day, you don't get to come in after the fact and bump somebody. You have to take what's left. 4. The second round of bidding shall be by the same procedure as round number 1. 5. Employees on the second round of bidding may take the remainder of their yearly annual leave allotment, or at least decrease the remainder of their leave to 440 hours. Article 10.4.C, bid allowances, cancellations, and swaps. 1. Employees earning 20 and 26 days annual leave desiring to bid outside the choice vacation period may be allowed to take up to 4 full weeks annual leave on the first round of bidding. 2. Employees earning 13 days annual leave desiring to bid outside the choice period may be allowed to take up to 3 full weeks of annual leave. City carrier assistants desiring to bid outside the choice period may be allowed to take up to 2 full weeks of annual leave. 3. No combination of bidding on the first round of bidding for employees earning 20 and 26 days annual leave shall exceed 4 weeks. Example, 2 weeks in the choice period and 2 weeks outside the choice period. So the most weeks you're going to get in that first round during the choice period is 2 weeks, but you can take up to 4 weeks. 5. Employees failing to submit a bid on the first round of bidding shall revert to the bottom of the seniority list. So once again, if you don't get your bid and you missed your chance, and you take what's left. 6. Cancellation of leave must be submitted no later than 9 a.m. 10 days prior to the Monday of the leave week in question. All bids/cancellations will be jointly pulled and posted by union and management at all times. Leave positions canceled by resignation shall be posted upon occurrence and rebid on a seniority basis. Cancellations of leave less than 10 days prior may be granted upon approval of the union and management, provided the annual leave board is not full. If the cancellation is permitted after the ops are pulled, the canceling party becomes unassigned for that service week if a carrier has successfully opted on that assignment. I really like this one because if I'm going to go on vacation and a CCA opts on my route, you know, they had other routes maybe that they could have opted on. And if they choose my route and then I decide, oh, I'm not going to go on vacation, that CCA gets screwed. They get bumped off of that opt. Well, here in this provision in number 6, that doesn't happen. If the CCA got the opt and I cancel, well, now I'm unassigned and I'm going to be bouncing around that week. So this is a nice way to make sure that those lower seniority, the people who can opt, get taken care of, that they don't get screwed out of their assignment. 7. Employees shall be permitted to work out a mutually agreeable exchange of vacation, full weeks only. These exchanges within the unit must be submitted no later than 9 a.m., 10 days prior to the Monday of the vacation exchange leave week in question. So what will happen at my station is Christmas is in really high demand. And so somebody will make an agreement with a high seniority carrier, like, dude, I'm really trying to get Christmas off. I'm going back to visit my family. Will you bid on Christmas? And then I'll bid on, you know, Memorial Day, and then we can swap so that I can get Christmas off. So that is allowed. Article 11, holidays. 11.6, holiday pecking order. Management will select carriers / part-time regulars to work the holidays in the following pecking order. 1. Part-time flexibles. So if you're a PTF in Las Vegas, it's just guaranteed you're working the holiday. 2. Full-time regulars or part-time regulars who volunteer on their designated holiday by seniority. Remember, with the designated holiday, you're only getting that 8 hours of straight time pay. So that's why they're second in the seniority order if they volunteer. It's also worth noting that holidays don't fall under the Article 8 mandating rules where... with mandating, as long as management follows this pecking order, this is something completely separate from like other overtime issues. 3. City carrier assistance to the extent possible. 4. Full-time regulars, part-time regulars who volunteer on their non-scheduled day by seniority. So once again, we solicit for volunteers. This time they're going to be paid time and a half, but at least they volunteered. 5. Full-time regulars or part-time regulars who did not volunteer on what would have been their non-scheduled day by inverse seniority. So now we go to the people who are being forced in, and first we do it just based on their day off. And then finally, 6, full-time regulars or part-time regulars who did not volunteer on what would have been their designated holiday by inverse seniority. So that's how all that works here. Article 13, assignment of ill or injured employees. Article 13.2.C, request for light duty. Installation heads shall show the greatest consideration for full-time or part-time employees requiring light duty or other assignments, giving each request careful attention and reassign such employees to the extent possible in the employee's office. When a request is refused, the installation head shall notify the concerned employee in writing, stating the reasons for the inability to reassign the employee. So what's nice here is that even part-time employees like CCAs and PTFs are included in this light-duty assignment, that we really have to try to find work for these people. Article 13.4.A, assignment of light duty. Every effort shall be made to reassign the concerned employee within the employee's present craft or occupational group, even if such assignment reduces the number of hours of work for the supplemental workforce. After all efforts are exhausted in this area, consideration will be given to reassignment to another craft or occupational group within the same installation if work is available. There will be notification to the appropriate union. Article 13.4.D, assignment within medical restrictions. The reassignment of full-time or part-time employees under the provisions of this article to an agreed-upon light-duty temporary or permanent or other duty assignment within the office, such as type of assignment, area of assignment, hours of duty, etc., will be the decision of the installation head, who will be guided by the examining physician's report, employee's ability to reach the place of employment, ability to perform the duties involved, and consultation with the local union president or designee. So once again, even if a CCA has medical restrictions, they are included in this local memorandum. Article 14, safety and health. Article 14.2, vehicle assignments. No vehicle will be assigned to an employee unless it can be reasonably expected to conform to recognized safety standards. Management will make a reasonable effort to assign the same vehicle to the same full-time/collection route each day. Management may interchange vehicles to equalize mileage and to reflect the mail volume for various routes. It is the employer's intent that vehicles will be maintained in an acceptable state of cleanliness inside and out. Now, this is one that I have question about. With this statement, I'll read it again. It is the employer's intent that vehicles will be maintained in an acceptable state of cleanliness inside and out. So what is meant by it's the employer's intent? What form does that intent take? I actually asked this down at the Union Hall. I asked of my union president, and the answer was, we don't know. It hasn't really been tested. But I can tell you, it says inside and out, and we have a company that comes and sprays down the outside of our vehicles to keep them reasonably clean. But the inside of the vehicles are never cleaned. And so if this is something that's supposed to be done in the same manner, because it's listed here together, then we're getting shortchanged on the cleaning of the inside of our vehicles. It's reasonable to assume that management expects the carriers to clean the inside of their vehicle, but it's not explicitly stated here. So if anything, I would use this as an argument that I need to take time to clean my vehicle and that it is allowed for here in this local agreement. And that's something that is again, reasonable for me to take time for when I'm on my route. Article 14.2, emergency situations. No employee shall be required to perform their normal duties in any situation where authorities deem an emergency exists that may threaten life or bodily harm of the employee, which could include them crossing picket lines in the performance of their duties, entering riot areas that are deemed riot areas by civil authorities, or working under bomb scare conditions as designated by the Postal Service or civil authorities. All employees must immediately inform their supervisor. The supervisor will immediately investigate the incident reported by the employee to verify a hazard exists. The management will notify, or then management will notify Branch 2502 office when any of the foregoing conditions exist. Article 14.4, Safety and Health Committee. When establishing a Joint Safety and Health Committee, as provided for in Article 14 of the National Agreement, the President of the NALC branch or their designee will serve as a committee member. Meeting of the committee shall be held at least quarterly and more often if necessary. In offices where there is no Safety and Health Committee, safety and health is a proper subject for discussion at the Joint Labor Management Committee meetings. Which brings us to Article 17, the next point, representation. Article 17.5, Labor Management Meetings, Minutes, and Policies. Local labor management meetings for the Las Vegas installation will be held on a monthly basis. More on that in a second. Local labor management meetings of the Boulder City, Henderson, and North Las Vegas installations will be held on a quarterly basis. 1. Two union representatives will be compensated by management to attend the local labor management meetings when held with the Las Vegas, Henderson, or North Las Vegas installations, so long as time of attendance falls within the employee's normal work schedule. One union representative will be compensated by management at the Boulder City meeting. 2. Minutes shall accurately reflect verbal responses given. The disposition given at regular labor management meetings shall continue in effect until it is retracted or revised at a subsequent regular labor management meeting. 3. The policies to be established by management for the Christmas operation will be subject of discussion at the timely, regularly scheduled joint labor management meeting. 4. The respective labor management meetings with Branch 2502 will be held at a day, time, and place mutually agreed upon by the parties. 5. Minutes of all labor management meetings shall be sent to Branch 2502 within 5 working days of said meeting and shall be posted on the official bulletin board of each station within 10 calendar days. So this is something that is not being done at my local union. These labor management meetings, as near as I can tell, have not been happening indefinitely into the past. I couldn't tell you when the last one was, and in speaking with my union executives, they couldn't tell me when the last one was either. So what's the story here? Why is this not happening? What's going on? Unfortunately, I am only an alternate steward, and I've already been rocking the boat, so I can't really press this issue too much, but it really bothers me that this is something that is obligated, that we're obligated to do, and these meetings happen for a very good reason, and they're just not being done. You know, so it first was brought to my attention because I went looking for these minutes. And hey, what is being talked about at these meetings? What agreements are we coming to? Because these agreements or the things that are talked about are citable. And they just don't exist. So as I understand it, March will be our first labor management meeting in a long time. Maybe that would have happened anyway without my boat rocking. Who can say? But I'm very thankful that they will finally be happening again this month. And I look forward to seeing those minutes. These meetings are intended for union president or their designee to get together with the local postmaster and hammer things out. Like, for example, in my area, a lot of CCAs are being worked as on-call employees, and they're just not scheduled at all, or they're scheduled at 9:30 every day, and they're expected to just wait by the phone and see when they're working. This is in clear violation of the contract and of M documents, and it's not okay. So that's something that is going to be discussed, as I understand it, at this first March meeting. Like, hey, you know this is not okay. Another thing that I've suggested to be discussed, I don't know if it will be, is most areas have this problem of not hiring enough CCAs, and here we have the opposite problem. We have been hiring CCAs like mad for months and months, and we have so many CCAs that they can't get hours, and we have good carriers who are quitting because they're only getting like 20 hours a week, and there's no end in sight. These new CCAs just keep coming, and so this is the kind of thing that could be discussed at these meetings and be like, hey, what are you doing here? What is the purpose in hiring all these CCAs? What are you trying to accomplish? You know, what's the end? How many is going to be enough? All these things can be discussed. And any other major issues that keep coming up that need this high level of input and discussion. You know, another thing that should come up at this meeting is Article 15 problems, where management is not meeting in good faith at these lower levels. And they're openly saying, I'm not allowed to settle any grievances. Dude, that is not okay. And so that absolutely should be discussed at these meetings. And the fact that these meetings haven't been happening may be part of the reason that there's all this dysfunction between union and management here at the local level. You know, I can't speak to that too much because I'm not involved in any of that. I'm just an alternate steward. And luckily at my station, we have been settling grievances at the informal level. But that is not the case at other stations. And again, these labor management meetings are supposed to address those kind of issues. Article 20, parking. Article 20.3, assignment of employee parking. Parking spaces in excess of the needs of the federal government shall be available to employees on a first-come basis. All spaces not marked will be available spaces. Parking will not be allowed in driveways or maneuvering areas. There shall be two parking spaces designated for Branch 2502 NALC at the GMF, which is our main processing plant, and that's where all the bosses are. So at my station, parking has been an issue in that our spaces for our trucks are poorly numbered. A lot of spaces don't have numbers at all, or they're very hard to read, and it's something that I've been pressing for at my station. Like, dude, why don't we number these spaces? And so ultimately, if the spaces aren't numbered, we can always just take the case of, or take the strategy of sowing chaos and just park wherever. And then park our own vehicles in the truck spots because they're not numbered. And the local agreement says if it ain't numbered, you can park there, you know, whatever. There's no reserve spaces. So hopefully this is something that gets resolved. And this is the kind of thing that drives me bonkers. Like, there is a solution to this that costs less than $100 that we could mark all the spaces. And everything would be clearly marked. And there wouldn't have these issues of vehicles being parked in the wrong spot anymore, or at least not as frequently, because they'd be clearly marked. And it's like, what's the downside? What's the problem with marking spaces? Like, why is that not happening? This has been a problem at my station for a long time, and I've brought it up to management many times, and they also agree it's a problem. We've had stand-ups in the morning like, hey, you got to make sure you put that vehicle back in the proper spot. Yeah, we'd love to. Maybe if you properly mark the freaking spots. So that's Article 20. Article 41, letter carrier craft. Article 41.1.8.3, bid posting and time frames. 1. The scheduled non-working days for all assigned full-time and part-time regulars shall be on a rotating basis. So this is something that carriers ask about. It's like, hey, why do our days off rotate? What's up with that? Well, that's decided at your local level. Now that I've been doing it for a while, I really prefer the rotating days off because it gives me a long weekend, like every 5 weeks or 6 weeks or however it works out. And then I get a Sunday, Monday after that. And then I also get a smattering of weekdays off and I can use those to conduct business. Like today is my scheduled day off and I went out and got the car, had the smog check and got it registered, did some yard work. Oh, well, I guess I could do yard work on the weekends. But, and I could probably, well, regardless, I really like having rotating days off. Plus, as mentioned earlier, it works in conjunction with having the vacation week start on Monday. And so it can coincide with the rotating days off and make for some really long vacations where you only have to take like 4 or 5 days and you get like 9 days off. It's really nice. So something to think about for your own local. That is something that is subject to change. But you know who's going to oppose it is the old-timer carriers who have fixed days off and they're off like Saturday, Sunday, or Sunday, Monday. They don't want to change it, and they're the ones who vote. But at your local level, everybody can vote. And if you're interested, this is where you make the change. All right, number two. Absent of the automated bid process, employees desiring to bid for a posted route shall put bid in writing on bid cards and place in employee bid box. Closing time for bid will be 9 a.m. on closing date. One NALC representative designated by branch president shall be present when bids are pulled, opened, and assignments are made. A supervisor or union representative will place bids in a large envelope, seal, initial, and file in appropriate area, except in Las Vegas, where the bids will be sent to local services for processing. 3. All full-time and part-time regular assignments shall be posted a minimum of 10 working days, not to exceed 15 working days. This doesn't say vacant assignment. Well, this must mean like if a route becomes available. It's not super clear here, but it probably, if read in conjunction with 41.1.8.3 in the national agreement, it probably makes more sense. 4. In instances where several assignments are posted, an employee may bid for as many assignments as are posted, stating their preference. Article 41.1.8.5, change of starting times. When an employee's route has a change in starting time of more than 1 hour, an assignment will not be posted. Only once per calendar year is management permitted to change start times to a later time. So this has been a problem in many places. Like right now, we start at 8 o'clock where I work. We used to start at 7:30, and lately we've been having problems with parcels being ready. And so I suspect that there is a change in start times on the horizon. If they change to 8:30, then they can't come back within the same year and say, oh, it wasn't late enough, now we've got to change it to 9. So that's covered in the local. Next, Article 41.1.C.4, T6/relief assignments. A full-time or part-time regular employee called into work on a non-scheduled day will be assigned where needed and will not bump the T6 or relief scheduled to the route that day unless the T6 or relief voluntarily moves to a vacant assignment within the employee's string. This is something that people fight about. Hey, if I come in on my day off, I want to work my own route. Well, it's your day off. You don't have a scheduled assignment. You work where we put you, and you can't bump your T6. Article 41.2.B, opt hold down bid procedures. 1. Full-time vacant duty assignments of 5 days or more shall be posted in the same manner and area as the vacation bid chart. 2. Unassigned regulars, reserve letter carriers, and part-time flexible employees may exercise their seniority for preference of any full-time vacant duty assignment, provided they're not on probation, and shall work the assignment for its duration. This is consistent with what's in the national agreement. 3. Bids for opt hold-down positions shall close at 9 a.m. Tuesday and will be posted Wednesday prior to the Monday of the beginning of the opt. Any subsequent available vacant duty assignments occurring outside this cycle will be assigned to the appropriate available employee by management until the next regular opt and hold bid-down cycle. 4. Opt box will be locked and pulled jointly by union and management at all times. So, going back to number 3, the way this schedule works is on Tuesday, so Monday we do our vacation bidding, and so I'll go in, and I'm in charge of this at my station, so I'll go in, pull all the vacations, put it all up on the board, and then I'll look to see, you know, who's going to be on vacation the following week. Tuesday, we pull ops, so carriers can go in like Monday afternoon and see if somebody put in for vacation to take the next full week off, and they can put in their opt on that at the last minute, and that would be a valid opt. When they put in that opt on Tuesday, you know, we have some routes at my station that just nobody wants, and so they're vacant all the time. if an employee puts in an opt for that route on Tuesday, in theory, they could just start that opt immediately because it's open. There's nobody doing it right now. They wouldn't be bumping anybody. But because of the local agreement, you don't start the opt until the following Monday. So for the rest of that week, yeah, you've got your opt coming, but you can't start it until Monday. And finally, is this the last of it? Yes, it is. Article 41.3.0, abolishment procedures. When a letter carrier route or full-time duty assignment, other than the letter carrier routes or full-time duty assignments of the junior employee, is abolished at a delivery unit as a result of, but not limited to, route adjustments, highways, housing projects, all routes and full-time assignments at that unit held by letter carriers who are junior to the carrier whose route or full-time duty assignment was abolished shall be posted for bid in accordance with the posting procedures in Article 41. So what that means, and this has happened at my station, after route adjustments, somebody's route got eliminated, and so since they no longer have a route, they can take the route of anybody junior to them. And in fact, anybody can take the route of anybody junior to them because that route is now available for the taking. And so we've had situations at my station where a reasonably high seniority carrier had their route eliminated, and man, it threw the station into total chaos. It essentially opened up the entire station for like a complete rebid. So generally, when management eliminates a route, they try to eliminate the route on the lowest possible seniority carrier so that it makes for less chaos. But they don't always succeed in that. I have been that low carrier and had my route eliminated and wound up having to just find something else. So that's how that works here in Las Vegas. 2. The posting for bid of routes and full-time duty assignments in the circumstances described immediately above shall be restricted to the affected delivery unit. This shall be an exception to the procedures for posting duty assignments provided in Article 41 of the National Agreement and in this local Memorandum of Understanding. 3. For purposes of applying this provision, a delivery unit shall be a station within an installation and or an installation in and of itself. So when these routes suddenly go up for rebid, it's only for bidding inside that station. All right, that is my local Memorandum of Understanding. I am curious to hear what kind of provisions you guys have in yours, because this local memorandum is always subject to change. It is not always subject to change. It is subject to change immediately after the ratification of the new contract. But hopefully that happens in our near future. I'm recording this in early March 2024. And still waiting on our next contract. So if you have cool provisions in your local that you think we should adopt, let me know about them. Drop me an email at classesofmail@gmail.com. And, you know, maybe I'll put forth some suggestions for things we can put in our next local. I have some changes already in mind, some really minor tweaks that I would like to see put in here, but I could always use more input. All right, so that's a local agreement. By all means, get in touch with your union officials and read your local agreement, because guaranteed there's going to be fascinating stuff in there that will help make your life easier as a carrier, help you to understand the rules, and help make you discipline-proof. I'll catch you guys next time.